Come at the Koshcast. This week, it's nightmares for Swansea as Leicester go clear at the top of the table, while a couple shakes of Shaqiri's hips are enough for Stoke to destroy Manchester City. Manchester United, meanwhile, continue to be as dull as a TV show about antiquing. Arsenal finally scrape a win, and Chelsea, well, Chelsea, ladies and gentlemen, were the protagonist in a born supremacy. In Spain, Peter went on a limb, but might have hired the wrong Neville, while Benzema steps into the spotlight for all the right reasons. Of course, Moment of the Week and MLS Cup chat brings us to the conclusion. Let's begin. Welcome everyone to another episode of the Koshcast. I've got Rishay on my left.
Hello, hello.
And Bernie on my right.
Hello.
And we are potting for the first time from Rishay's new downtown apartment. Congratulations.
Thank you, sirs. I'm glad to have you guys here in the studio recording.
Yeah.
Great to be here.
Technically, it is a studio apartment.
Yes, it is.
And we are here in the Kosh Studios.
Yeah. So let's get right into it then. We'll start, as usual, with the Premier League. What?
So I'm just looking at the agenda, and your handwriting is great, man.
It is. It's a 5-year-old handwriting, though. Like, there's no cursive.
There are a lot of, like, not circles, but...
There is. Like, the dots in my eyes are circles, not dots.
Anyway, I'm getting distracted by your beautiful handwriting.
I know. I appreciate it.
It's very distracting, man.
Yes. Well, the first thing it says on the agenda is Stoke 2, City 0, which was the earliest game on Saturday.
That's Stoke 2, Manchester City 0.
Stoke Alona 2... Manchester City, no.
Yes, true. And the Stoke Alona is basically made up of Shaqiri, Boyan, and Afellay. And Shaqiri's okay. The one that stepped up.
It's funny to see that Boyan Kirkic, as a lone striker with all this flair behind him, is actually working out for Stoke this season, because Shaqiri is an absolute beast.
He's this game in particular, he absolutely... it was the first 15 minutes. Stoke went 2-0 up, Arnautovic with both goals, but yeah, really all the hard work from Shaqiri. Yeah.
Beautiful moves by him. I did not expect to see Shaqiri doing this in the Premier League, but while watching this game, 7 or 8 times he made the exact same through-pass diagonal ball.
It was almost identical to Jamie Vardy's record-winning goal, that left-footed pass across the defense, and then Arnautovic running across, one touch, and exactly same finish. It was almost identical.
He's a terrier of a player, you know? He's built like a wall. He's so small.
He's a barrel.
And you can't really knock him over, but he also has the skills, you know, the foot skills to actually do something.
Shaqiri, to me, is the type of body that he used to be taller and then got squished. Like, you know what I mean? He's so stocky. He's so wide.
I think he's built like a rugby player. He's just impossible to knock over, and at the same time, he's just got these quick legs.
Well, one thing we've learned recently is when you adjust the pixel sizes of things, it squishes it, and that's probably what happened to Shaqiri when he was
growing up. Yes, Bernie's been experimenting with our new logo quite a bit, which you can find on the website and on Twitter.
I hope everyone likes it. Thanks to Akil for getting it made for us.
Yes, definitely. Back to this game, though. Joe Hart was back in goal. He missed last game. I thought he was at fault for the first one. The ball that Shaqiri played right in across of him, I thought he could have dealt with it instead of let it run across, which eventually Arnautovic got to. I thought that was a bit on his end.
I'm not going to blame Joe Hart for that. I'm going to blame Bakary Sagna for that, because he let Arnautovic run right across him, which is it's academic. This is elementary school football stuff. You cannot do that. And he did it the second goal as well, the exact same thing.
So as Stoke went 2-0 up very early on, City didn't really get into the game either at that point. You'd think, all right, well, Stoke are going to take the two goals and just sit and defend, and City are going to pile the pressure. They didn't really pile the pressure.
No, absolutely not. I think Shaqiri dominated Fernandinho a few times. He had him in his back pocket this whole game. Yep. But even in the second half, Stoke had 3 or 4 clear-cut chances. It could have been 4-0. It could have been 5-0.
It could have been 5-0, and Arnautovic could have scored all of them. Because he hit the post twice.
Has been great recently.
He's
been fantastic.
He hit the post twice. Shaqiri missed an open goal from an Arnautovic assist.
Right. Possibly, yeah. An eventual assist. And then Pellegrini in the second half, he subbed off Boni, Silva, and Fernandinho. He brought on 3 new players.
Iheanacho,
yeah. But what happened was, the last 15 minutes of the game, Fernando got injured, and they played with 10 men. Which brings a question of, yes, managers want to change the game, but they always say leave one substitution for the end. But I guess at 2-0 down, I mean, he wanted to make as much impact as possible.
It was difficult for City. I think Pellegrini spoke about tired legs after this game. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, David Silva was coming back from injury. So playing him for the entire 90 minutes in a lost cause would have been silly. So I think that overall, it just didn't work out for City.
I do think that you have to be careful when you make... You know, all 3 subs, you are taking a gamble. We understand that. But I think managers, City's players are better than Stoke's players. We know this.
Yes.
And sometimes you just need to get into their heads a little bit. I think it maybe should have just taken the first 10 minutes of the second half, see how things are going, mm-hmm. and then you still have another 40, you know, minutes plus injury time to affect the game with substitutions if you need to do that.
Right, right. And the interesting point here is that Yaya didn't play this game. He wasn't in the squad. I think he's injured slightly. But the idea is that, I mean, I thought City would really benefit from dropping Yaya. I don't know if it's directly related to him not playing, but it seems weird because I was expecting a better City without Yaya Touré in there, but it didn't seem to work out for them. Because that's what I would have done. I would have dropped Yaya by now. But
I think you would have to because yeah. he's not interested. He needs to get someone else that's interested. But Fernando and Fernandinho, it's almost as if they look to him for instruction.
Right.
But then where is the instruction?
Right, right. So that really, City dropped those really big 3 points to kind of stay at the top of the table. And then Arsenal followed that game. They were playing Sunderland at the Emirates. And they knew the result at that point. And if they got their result, they would, you know, jump City to the top of the table. So with Arsenal's really, really depleted squad, it was a bit iffy at the start of this game.
You were a little nervous,
yes.
I remember. It was
yes.
With good reason as well, because I think Sunderland played one of their best games against Arsenal in
mm-hmm.
recent seasons,
yep.
but Arsenal were up to the challenge and got their 3 goals and 3 points.
I mean, it was at the beginning, Sunderland played really well. The front three of Giroud, Ox, and Campbell are, you know, they're not that high level. So Arsenal were always going
to
struggle.
Mohamed, I'd like you to explain exactly how you felt about Giroud this game.
any game. Giroud was he was useless. He was absolutely useless. He doesn't have the pace. He doesn't have even the physical ability that people think he brings. He doesn't actually bring those. Sure, a couple of headers here and there, but he scored this game. Fair to him. He made a great run. He scored two.
What, you mean the own goal?
He scored
yeah,
two.
He scored that.
He scored two identical goals.
Yes, one beautiful top corner against Cech, which, you know, Cech is a good keeper, so for Giroud to score against
Take him by surprise. You can't really do that to Cech.
Yes. But, you know what? Ramsey played in midfield instead of Santi, who's out for like 4 months now, and that's where a lot of Arsenal fans want to see Ramsey. They think it's his best position. When he had that unbelievable season, that's where he played. And he played okay. He's still coming back from injury. But the one thing that you could see is when Ramsey isn't playing with Bellerin on the right, Bellerin is so exposed.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the same player anymore since Ramsey got kind of moved from the right. So
I think this is the type of game, you know, we talk about winning when you're not really at your best and when the chips are down and everything. And I think this was an important victory because Sunderland, as Richey likes to say, were back in form. Sam Allardyce had seemed to, you know, turn that ship a little bit.
Yeah.
And then when Arsenal took the lead, you might think, okay, cool. But then when the home goal happened, which is, again, from a set piece, which Arsenal have been weak from this season, you think, oh, here we go again. So for Giroud to get the go-ahead, I think it was the go-ahead goal, it was great for him,
mm-hmm.
but I think it was a sense of relief for Arsenal, because if you didn't and you go into this 1-1 draw or something,
mm-hmm.
people are going to start shouting
no
for a lot of chaos.
No prizes for guessing when Arsenal conceded the goal, of course, in the 15 minutes leading to halftime, which is kind of worrying. Like, just your concentration can drop. If you're 1-0 up and it's the 40th minute, you want to take that 1-0 into the dressing room. It makes all the difference in the world. The other team scores in the 43rd or whatever, and they're so pumped up for the second half, and it's really kind of, it doesn't help.
You know, it just goes to show the ebbs and flows of the game in general.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're playing against a team that has some confidence, anything can happen. But for
right.
Arsenal to grind out this result at the end of the day was good because they are in a patch right now with a lot of injuries. And
yeah.
they really need to pick
and
up
bad
points.
Form. I mean, the last two games, no wins for Arsenal
yeah.
against quite easy opposition. What is it? Norwich and West Brom. So,
yeah.
Anyways, before moving on, I mean, right now, Koscielny, Cech, and Ozil are really the three kind of gluing this team together, keeping them kind of just papering over all the cracks.
Yeah.
And if one of them gets injured, I really fear.
Well, Koscielny was injured for a bit,
yeah.
and we already saw what happened
yes.
when he's not in. For me, I think, well, Gabriel's a good defender, but when you're not playing week in, week
yes.
out, you don't have the rhythm of the games, and he probably doesn't have a partnership with Mertesacker.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just a disaster.
You already think that Koscielny carries Mertesacker all the time.
Yes.
So imagine Gabriel coming in and having, according to you, to do both of their jobs as well. And Mertesacker, to be fair,
They complement each other.
Mertesacker absolutely kills Koscielny on the offside trap. Mertesacker does not want to play offside trap whatsoever. And Koscielny is always stepping up. And every time Koscielny puts his hand up to say, where's the offside, it's always Mertesacker that's covering that. And it's
yeah. To be fair, I don't think there needs to be any panic from Arsenal fans yet, because, you know, with three points off the top right now before Christmas, I think they're in a good position overall. When the players come back from injury, they're going to be fine.
Here's the thing about that, right? Sure, don't panic, because the points are there. But it's the same thing that Chelsea fans, not Chelsea fans, United fans are going to say,
right.
City fans are going to say, because they're going to say, well, we're just 1 point off the top. United are fourth, but we're just 3 points off the top. Yeah. But everyone has had their chance to not only, exactly, to run away with it if they manage to find that consistency. You know, we'll get on to the subject of United, but they had the chance even this weekend. And everyone keeps messing up their chance. It doesn't give me any confidence
City's,
in them at all.
City's first seven games of the season when they absolutely obliterated everyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone was like, season over. Everyone else focused on top four. And then now they're like, it's so crazy how that happens.
It's a trend of this season. Like, it's so unpredictable that we can't say that it's time to panic. Anything can happen.
Let alone this season. It's a trend of this weekend. We just talked about Stoke beating City 2-0. Chelsea losing to Bournemouth 1-0.
At home.
At Stamford Bridge.
It's a shock.
Like,
Is it a shock at this point?
It is.
It is because it's Bournemouth.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's Everton, maybe, you know, you go, Chelsea have just been really crap, but Everton could beat them. This is a Chelsea who hadn't let in a goal in, like, three games.
Yes.
Everyone thought that they were, even though they weren't firing on all cylinders, that they at least had steadied the ship with this false nine thing. And then they lose to Bournemouth at home. That's unbelievable.
Unbelievable. The Bournemouth fans celebrating in the crowd.
It was the biggest result of the club's
history. Of their lives. Yeah,
it
absolutely.
Was. And to be fair,
off a set piece in the last 10 minutes.
I agree with Bernie that I'm one of the people that thought Chelsea started to steady the ship. Mourinho started to figure out what was working, what wasn't. And yes, the false nine looked great. Hazard looked, okay, he hasn't scored, but he looked full of energy. He looked much better. But then this result just brings them back down again. And Mourinho was aiming for top four a week ago. After this game, he came out saying, well, after this result, it's realistically top six at best at this point.
You know what? They had their chances to score. Matic had a point blank
here. I couldn't believe that. That was a trend of this weekend as well. People missing just absolute
two penalty shouts, too, to be fair, for Chelsea. Two handballs, which I thought at least one could have been given.
Mm-hmm.
At least. Yeah. Also, Bournemouth goal, offside. It was offside.
Actually, Gary Cahill played him onside.
But that's the problem. You need two players, right?
No. You need the defender and the goalie.
Yeah,
but the goalie was ahead of the play. The goalie went out to punch the ball. That's why. So the goalie wasn't there. So it's one of those, again, that people forget that rule.
Except that the guy who scored was the other guy who wasn't the guy who was offside.
Oh, no, but Murray got the goal.
I'm confused.
So, either way, Murray got the goal. He looked offside. And Chelsea had two penalties, which, you know, watching the game, I thought one of them could have been given at least. But Bournemouth were well drilled. They defended well, they played really well, and they looked like they had a game plan in mind, which came off at the end.
A false nine maybe doesn't work out very well against a team that defends deep.
Right.
You know, because you don't have that penetration. Hazard, I was watching the game and I saw him drift a lot to the left-hand side, which is just what he does naturally. Like, you can drill Hazard to play a false nine all you want, but that's what it is, a false nine, because he's going to go back to do what he's actually known to do. And I saw him and Oscar getting into a lot of similar spaces.
Yeah.
But what can you do when you're non-false nine, which is Costa, is having an unbelievably bad season? He can barely control a ball at this point. He's
Loic Remy. I don't think he is... is a world-class striker by any means,
but
Loic Remy at least knows what to do, and we've seen him do it time and time again. Let him play on the shoulder of the defender and run in, and then you can have Hazard or Oscar behind him to feed him the ball. Try that for once.
Right.
Absolutely, I fully agree. I think Mourinho's usage of Hazard as the lone striker in this game was flawed. Flawed logic.
The idea here is that the one thing Chelsea fans can take away from this is that they are playing better. Before, they used to lose and play really bad. Now they're playing a bit better. And hopefully this is just a blip in kind of their road to recovery. I don't know what the recovery really is, what the aim is here. But, I mean, are you going to play Europa League next season? Like, what's the idea? Win the Champions League?
I think the question then becomes, you know, we all know that Jose Mourinho's philosophy, to use a now popular term, is defense.
Yes.
You know, is pragmatism.
Mm-hmm.
When you don't even have that. Because he hadn't lost at home, I think, for the first... like forever until maybe this season or last, I forget which one, but he hadn't lost a home for years.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, not just for Chelsea, for all his clubs.
Mm-hmm.
So now this season, I think he lost three at home already.
Right.
That just shows that the castle is crumbling.
Well, that's what I heard this guy on in an interview once, just a regular fan, and he said something really interesting. He said the problem with Mourinho is that he has built his whole kind of image and legendary status and whatever as it goes on trophies.
Mm-hmm.
Not on beautiful play.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike, let's say, someone like Alex Ferguson, who mixes them well.
Mm-hmm.
Arsene Wenger, who's a bit more on the play with some trophies here, you know, sprinkled in. But so you take away the trophies from Mourinho, and what do you have left? nothing. He's useless to you without the trophies. You have Alex Ferguson and Wenger not winning trophies, or Pep not winning a trophy, but you can't feel as bad because you're watching your team perform at a high level regardless, but you're just unlucky. But
I agree with your point, but I think it's harsh to judge him on trophies, no trophies. I think that this Chelsea squad is actually in a period of transition right now. With their core line, John Terry, you know, he's old, he's fading away, Lampard's gone.
Is the same.
And these are the early Mourinho players.
Not sure I agree with that in its entirety. I see what you're saying, but I think the transition was when he first got there, and they came third. Season. And then he revamped it because he got rid of three strikers.
When they were the little horse. Yeah.
Exactly. And he got rid of David Luiz. He got rid of Mata. No. He got rid of
three strikers. That was absolutely savage.
That was a transition. Then they won the league. And then he firmed it up this season, at least he thought he was. Mm-hmm. But the players that he relied on were not even that old. Matic was the best defense midfielder in the whole.
I don't know why.
He's not old. And he's a complete failure. Because Fabregas was an amazing number 10.
Costa was the best striker.
Evans was the best defender.
Yeah.
Or best right back at least.
Absolutely.
And he's shocking.
I don't know what happened. I don't know
so
how they go
from
there.
It's possible that now there's a new cycle going on.
Possibly. I mean, they have to. With all the players they have sent out on loan and then sold, they wish they had some of them. Anyways, moving on from this, we'll see how Chelsea do in the next couple of weeks. But you know what? Top four looks very, very, very unlikely. Unless the other teams keep dropping points the way they are, which is, you know, this weekend the only team in the top to really get points was Arsenal.
And Leicester City.
I mean,
let's not forget about
that. True, we'll talk about them. We can talk about them now. So Leicester beat Swansea 3-0 away. Gary Monk in more trouble. Swansea really not looking good, but it's all about Leicester.
To be fair, this is the perfect game for Leicester to play, and I'm not surprised by the result at all because they have been phenomenal as a counter-attacking team this season.
Mm-hmm.
Playing away from home, we've seen every single team play that exact same strategy and come up with the goods.
Yeah,
I'm not a fan of sacking people. I'm really not. And I think Gary Monk is he seems like a really nice guy. He did very, very well.
He's hardworking.
But in my head, when it's in free fall and there doesn't seem to be a solution, you may have to try.
I think Moyes is... I would get Moyes in. I really would.
I don't know.
And he would take it.
Like, they have been dropping a lot of points, yes. But at the same time, they're not dropping points like an Aston Villa, for example.
Right.
That is a free fall.
Also, they have good players. Like, when you look at Aston Villa's team or Sunderland's, you're like, well, the players aren't really up to scratch. But Swansea have good players. Yeah. They're not playing well.
I think Swansea haven't won in a long,
time.
They might as well be Aston Villa at this point. And that's why it's so bad. And when you look at what they did when Michael Laudrup, he won them the Capital One Cup. He was on a high. People were talking about it. I remember going to Real Madrid when they sacked somebody. I don't remember who it was. And then he went into the exact same free fall and got sacked.
Well, without Swansea's kind of really good first five games of the season, they would be bottom right now easily. So he's really relying on that early form. And you're right.
But then Leicester are the complete opposite.
Leicester
complete opposite.
Like people are saying this is the hard run. They played United.
I believe it was
Swansea.
You who said this.
Well, it is technically.
Well, they're going to have City and Arsenal. I think again.
Yeah.
Or something. It's going to be tough.
It is going to be tough, but Vardy no goal, so he stops at 11.
Assist for Mahrez though.
Yes, so it's a shame that he stopped, but I mean, at least he stopped at the right time.
Yeah, he got the record. Now he can end the season.
Mahrez with a beautiful hat trick. He's also another player that's been him, Vardy, and Drinkwater have been phenomenal for Leicester.
A shade of offside for his second goal,
yes,
perhaps, but the third goal, beautiful tip tap,
and the right finishing with the right foot.
Vardy and Mahrez have 24 goals this season. Manchester United have 20, Liverpool have 18, and Chelsea have 17. Amazing.
Yeah,
that
this
is
a team that was
fantastic.
Last season was definitely going down like 100% until like the last like 5-6 games or whatever.
This might be a slightly unpopular comment to make, and inappropriate to some extent, but I believe that Mahrez looks a bit like Aladdin, and he is currently riding his red carpet.
Okay.
His magic carpet to the
That's
top
okay.
of the table.
I'll accept it.
I approve. Wait, why are you accepting? I get to approve.
Oh, sorry. The Egyptian, please.
Yes,
please.
I approve that. That's fine.
Who's the genie, though? Is the genie Ranieri?
Well, the genie would be the guy granting them their wishes. Who would that be? I mean,
the owner?
I guess. Oh, by the way, the owner has a quote from 2014, early 2015, saying, in the next 3 seasons, Leicester are going to finish in the top four.
Listen, he didn't know what he was saying. Because this is out the blue.
Hey.
No, he didn't have a plan. It wasn't like he said, I'm going to put this plan into motion. No, that's
really
not what happened here.
Yeah, I remember that tweet which people were saying Leicester, like, at the beginning of the season, sacked, like, 2-3 players for, like, having sex with a hooker in Thailand or whatever, while Chelsea spent God knows how much money, and they've switched positions in the table. It's unbelievable how these things happen.
Another stat I remember... I can't remember what Charles was saying too, but Jamie Vardy, after he scored that goal against Manchester United in the 5-3 last season, it went something like 20 games without a goal.
Oh, yeah.
And then all of a sudden, he did all this.
Yeah, he hit four.
So it's like, this is not something that anyone could have planned for.
If this was a movie, you'd be like, this is so unrealistic, yeah. I'm getting out of here.
Yes.
We've said this about Chelsea not playing well in 2015, the calendar year, but yeah. Leicester have done exactly
did
the opposite.
Did Leicester steal their powers? Yes. Like Space Jam? Did they do that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Another team that didn't get all the points they wanted was United, drawing 0-0 with West Ham at Old Trafford. But this game, the fact that it stayed 0-0 is beyond any logical explanation.
It was absolutely... Okay, the first half was a disgrace. Like, I think if we go back and check every recording we've done for last month, I've probably said Manchester United are a disgrace.
Every
single one. That first half was unbelievably bad. West Ham should have been 2-0 in the first half alone. Couldn't believe... And people are talking about our defense. Yeah, this game alone, they almost walk up
to... How you guys got a clean sheet? Even West Ham got a clean sheet. How, yeah. Lanzini had unbelievable chances.
Oh, my God.
Zarate. And the center back for West Ham had an unbelievable
Winston
game.
Winston Reid was an absolute
killed
beast.
Killed it.
I think this, as a commentator summarized at some point in the game, he said, this is a 0-0 game, but this is one of the good 0-0 games that we've seen.
Unbelievable. Yeah. It was unbelievable. I mean, Martial had so many chances. I think
Fellaini had a great chance. Yes.
The one in the first half, I thought Martial scored. I thought it was a goal. And Winston Reid flung himself. I was like, the adrenaline was done.
Yeah.
And Martial probably thought he had scored. And Winston Reid came from nowhere. And he saved it with his face or something. Like, I can't believe what he did.
At the same time, at the other end, Leicester's chance off the post. I think Smalling kicked it. West Ham. Mm-hmm. Smalling kicked it into the striker's face. It rebounded off the post and then hit De Gea's leg on the way out.
Yeah.
After De Gea spilled it. So it was, the ball was just pinballed.
And right after that, Reed hit the post with a header from a corner.
Unbelievable.
And in the second half, Fellaini, after Martial did some good work, it was a goal. Mm-hmm. But Adrian, I don't know what. Like, this game
was kind of
exciting, but in a very bad way.
But it must have been, like, so stressful for both supporters. It's
agonizing.
Like,
agonizing. Yeah.
Well, so United get a point here. I don't know. I think this is a game that Van Gaal would have wanted to get all three. After the game, he came out saying something. I mean, Van Gaal, with his kind of brash statements, he doesn't care. He just says, if we had a Suarez and an Aguero, we would have scored today. So he's basically telling Martial, you're not good enough. And the point is, Martial wasn't bought in to carry you guys. He was bought in as a supplement to the squad.
I have so many problems with that statement that he made, because he said, I'm not buying Martial for me.
Yeah.
I'm buying him for Ryan Giggs, because the kid was 19. Mm-hmm. No one. I remember with a bunch of us who said, if he scores 10 goals this season, that's an unmitigated success for a 19-year-old. So then to say, we don't have an Aguero or Suarez, you could have bought one.
Yeah.
You really could have. He could have gone to Napoli and said, here's 60 million
here's
for cash. Here, Higuain, thank you
Cavani,
very much.
Cavani, thank you very much.
Why not?
I mean, at the end of the day, Martial had his chances. He didn't score. They were agonizingly close. But Van Gaal's statements, I think this works against him, because the media takes his statements out of context sometimes, and his English isn't the best. So it's very easy to attack him.
He says what he thinks. He doesn't actually think about what I should say and what I should keep inside. Like, his inside words come out.
Oh, see what he said about Schweinsteiger? They asked him, and they said, you know, he seems to have acclimatized very well to England and everything, and he likes it here. And he literally said, you know what? The Schweinsteiger you've seen is not the Schweinsteiger from Bayern Munich, and I think he could have played better in every game he's played.
He's played in the most minutes out of any midfielder.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, he's basically the guy he relies on.
Exactly. I'm confused.
Van Gaal's great entertainment.
His mind works differently, that's
but
for sure.
To give West Ham props, they have not lost to any of the big teams.
No.
And I'm not including Chelsea in that. But they've not lost to any of them. They've beaten all of them, and then maybe United should see this and Leicester game as great points.
Yeah.
Because Leicester top of the league and West Ham beat everybody.
Exactly.
So maybe.
There was also Newcastle Liverpool today, which adds to the unbelievable results of this week. I mean,
talking about Steve McLaren being Steve Renault.
Yes, and we're talking about Liverpool absolutely dominating with a false nine away.
Jurgen Klopp was a hero.
Yeah, and the whole it lasted like a week. It was unbelievable. I mean, to be fair,
there was an image of Klopp's first 10 games. Everything was a win except for one draw and one loss.
Right. So right now with this loss, I mean, they had no Coutinho and no Emre Can. So to be fair, I think Emre Can was pivotal for them. And they missed him a lot in this game. Anita for Newcastle ran the show in midfield.
That's shocking. Because Anita has been one of the worst players in Premier League.
But today a couple of players really stepped up for Newcastle. Anita stepped up, Sissoko stepped up, and obviously Wijnaldum stepped up.
Yeah.
Dude, firstly, whether you have Emre Can or Coutinho, you should beat Newcastle 4-0.
Yeah.
But Jorginho Wijnaldum is 10 times better than Newcastle's entire squad put together.
Fully agree.
He deserves to be at a top 14. He is just that good.
He will be. And next season, he will be. I mean, now that he's in the spotlight, clubs will see him.
Chelsea
and
could use him?
Definitely. No. Sissoko as well has his game. I mean, consistency is the problem with these players of this, let's say, smaller clubs.
Mm-hmm.
But at the top, I mean, the commentator was saying, you don't play in the Premier League if you're not a good player.
Mm-hmm.
That's given. Yeah. So everybody you see on TV, sure, he didn't play for long enough. But everybody you see on TV is good enough. It's just consistency. Can you be at your best every single game?
Yes.
Sissoko at his best every single game is good enough for any team in the league.
It's like if you look at Barcelona, right? They never seem to drop off in performance.
Right.
And you're right. That's probably the difference between them and, say, Real Madrid, who have a lot of moody kind
consistency,
of players.
Consistency, yeah.
But if you look at Ronaldo, absolutely brilliant player. I like him. And I think his issue isn't even consistency. His issue is he just had a really crappy team.
Yes.
But like you're saying, people like Hadara, Sissoko, even Jack Kolbak is a decent
player.
They just need to bring it every game.
Yeah,
I want to talk a little bit about the game itself. Mm. Because I feel like this was an ideal game for Liverpool to come away from home, get a big result. They beat Chelsea 3-1 at Stamford Bridge, City 4-0,
Southampton 6-1.
They're only like 4 points away from second. They're so close.
They've been an exceptional road team under Klopp. Yep. This was their ideal game to perform. But what happened? It's a mystery.
I mean, what happened was, one, they were missing Coutinho and Chan, fine. And then Newcastle scored their goal. And then it kind of seemed like everything started to crumble slowly. But to be fair, Moreno had a goal that was given.
Oh, yes, and this was a beautiful chance.
I'm confused. No, not confused. Okay, see, I saw you guys were talking about that when I came on the thread, and I said to myself, I understand that it was Moreno on that side was not offside.
Yes.
Not at all.
Whoever that person was in the middle.
No.
Benteke.
Yeah.
No, I understand.
I
it wasn't actually being played to him.
Yes.
But, again, we've had this conversation. The way the rule is, the ball's going in that direction. If there's a player offside, once it leaves the player's foot, that's what the rule is.
But
he is offside.
No.
So I'm...
Hold on.
The way you're supposed to flag is, you flag immediately leaves the guy's foot.
But they don't... No, not anymore.
That's what the rule says.
That's what it used to
now
be.
But it's what the rule says, though.
No. I'll tell you. The rule used to be... The rule still stands that the guy is either offside or not when the ball leaves the striker's foot. Everyone agrees on that.
Mm-hmm.
But it used
he
to be
the
minute he let go of the ball, you flag. Now it's not the case. The case is now you wait to see if that player is interfering with play.
Exactly.
So that first guy was not interfering with play. The ball was way too high. The goalie didn't think it was a danger for that guy. So he's not interfering. That's why players who are all the way up front and then somehow the ball gets to them when it's a counterattack, they're not offside. Because, like, well, I wasn't interfering.
Absolutely not. And to move, like, I'll mention Messi, Neymar, and Suarez because they are the absolute masters of this vandalizing this offside rule.
That's true.
If you watch any Barcelona highlights, you
so
will
two
see
of them are offside at all times.
At all times.
And the third pass just gets
so the
cut back.
Yeah, the linesman now has to do double work because now what Gazan has to do is he can't just look at the guy who's passing the ball.
Yes.
He has to look at anyone who's in that line and check, okay, that guy is offside, but he's not interfering with play.
Yeah.
So when that guy touched it, that's a lot of confusion for a linesman.
It is, and for defenders too.
But they should know this rule.
But it's
not easy to perfect.
A defender also
leaves. You just got this wrong, and it's a shame.
When a defender leaves a guy offside, right? So I'm standing here, the guy is offside clearly, and I'm letting him stand there.
Mm-hmm.
If a guy overlaps and cuts it back to that guy, it's a goal.
I think they should go back to the way
offside.
It used to be.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure it's better for attacking football, but it's better for decisions.
All right, so anyways, what happened was Newcastle ended up scoring a second as well, winning the game 2-0. Which
very good finish from Wijnaldum.
Sissoko absolutely destroying Moreno on the right.
That's why Moreno didn't deserve the goal.
Wijnaldum with a great chip. A great little dink over
ball
the keeper.
Ball on
Great finish. Crespo-esque.
So yeah, last but not least, West Brom, Tottenham 1-1. Great result for West Brom. Tottenham came out and scored a fantastic goal. Dele Alli.
What a beautiful.
Unbelievable game for me. He played fantastic. Long ball from, what's his name?
Alderweireld.
Yes, Alderweireld or whatever, however you say it.
Toby.
It's going to suck. It's going to suck when Dele Alli and Harry Kane go to Real Madrid. It's really going to suck.
Yes.
Same package deal, 100 million.
Mm-hmm. Modric, Bale, Alderweireld, Kane.
Take Pochettino.
They don't even have to change their jersey. Just walk over.
Oh, Pochettino for Real Madrid when he just gets sacked. Because we all know he's getting sacked.
Can you imagine Real Madrid playing with 4 ex-Tottenham players?
Dude, the fans will
unbelievable. But yes, a great point for West Brom. Not very good for Tottenham because this was their chance with everyone else dropping points to really step
same
up.
Same thing
table.
As Liverpool.
Same thing.
They continue to only have lost one game this season.
The very first game. So they've been on an unbelievable run of form. And what we said last pod is the good thing they've done is turn draws into wins. Unfortunately, they're back to a draw now, but hopefully this is just a little blip for them.
Yeah.
Question about this, because this brings up an interesting thing. Like, we've talked about the quality of the Premier League dipping over the last whatever years, but now that we have this cluster, right, of teams from first to seventh who are very close to each other, can you imagine April? Like, if this keeps on the way it is, which it seems like it could, because I don't see any team particularly picking up momentum. Arsenal don't have too many injuries for that.
Right.
Man City don't have an identity. United just don't know. Yeah. And, like, Liverpool and Tottenham are kind of figuring it out. By March, or maybe by the time we get there, you know, it could be really fun to see how the end of the season
You could have out. An end of the last weekend of the season where you don't know whether how are you going to balance between a relegation scrap and a title scrap. You're going to have two happening at the exact same time. There could be three teams trying to win the league and three teams trying to stay up.
Obviously, workplace productivity is going to be zero.
All-time low.
Just the economy is going to be in a shambles.
You need to pivot your job functions if you're in stats, to, like, if you're in actuarial science like you, to just the risk analysis of the Premier League at this point.
Yeah.
I'm taking Mayo off.
New lines of business. Yes, absolutely.
But yes, it is quite fantastic.
Quick question. Mm-hmm. I want to say, you know, who's going to be on top of the table on Christmas morning? Is it going to be Leicester City?
No.
I don't know.
No, because listen, we keep saying that. We do keep saying that, but here's their record. They lost to Arsenal 5-2. Sure, they drew with Manchester United. That's great. Have they played City? No, they've not. They beat
City
Chelsea.
City just lost to Stoke.
I think when they really have a consistent when they have a consistent run of tough, this is how we're going to know. Because we don't know right now.
No, I love it. With Leicester, it's always, this is it. Like, they win the game, and you go, no. Next game. And they win that game,
We had Southampton 2 years ago. Yeah. We had West Ham last year. We've seen this before.
West Ham this year, too, are giant killers. Yeah.
All right, the other two scores, really quickly, was Watford beating Norwich 2-0. That's a very important 3 points for them. Southampton are absolute dross right now. They're playing really bad.
What happened to them?
I don't know. They kind of just dipped.
Sack Koeman and bring Moyes.
Sure. Let Moyes handle more than one team.
He'd be director of Premier League.
Yeah. Just Moyes kind of handle Southampton and Swansea at the same time.
Moyes is going to go on the board of FA chairman pretty soon.
Yes.
Just watch.
We've got Everton tomorrow, which, you know, everyone's FPL team is kind of waiting on Lukaku and Barkley.
Oh, that's
pretty
much
it. But they should really continue their good run of form. And we'll see how that goes. So let's move on to Move of the Week.
Yeah.
Move of the week.
Our first Moomoo this week comes from Mauritania, where the country's president himself was watching a cup final game between two teams.
Yeah.
It was 1-1 after the 63rd minute, and I guess he had a couple of appointments to make because he just got so bored and he just said, order a penalty shootout.
Like the climate summit was coming up and he said, guys, we got to change the world.
Yeah, global warming.
Penalty shootout.
It's amazing.
I don't want to watch any more of this game. 63rd minute. Let's just call penalties right now. And apparently the whole country was outraged by this.
So the ref blew his whistle and ordered penalties.
Yeah. And everyone was absolutely shocked.
When you're so powerful that you can change the rules of a sport. Like, you know what I mean?
That's what I want.
Yeah, that's what I want. That's how powerful I want to be. Anyways, fantastic stuff.
So, sticking to Africa.
Yes.
I have a Mumu from Ghana.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm not sure who it is in here, but Emmanuel Agbayang Badu is apparently 25 years old.
Okay.
Now, as a Nigerian, I know that this is not true.
He plays for the under 17.
We have a long history of doctoring our ages, let's say. Right. So, he was celebrating his 25th birthday, and then it sort of came up that this is impossible because... So there was a private investigator who was called in. I don't even know why, but maybe this is a FIFA thing they started to do.
Right.
But they found out that the hospital that Badu was born in was actually closed down 33 years ago.
Wow.
That you know when they say conclusive evidence?
I mean, this is conclusive.
And I think it's the same place they said, hopefully I'm not reading this wrong, but it looks like the same place that Asamoah Gyan and John Mensah, because it says here... We're equally shocked because God did it for Asamoah Gyan and John Mensah has now done it for this guy. So, I'm just saying, where was he, if he was born 33 years ago, where was he for 8 years prior?
No one knows.
Because this is not some, you know, nativity scene like Christmas where he came out of nowhere.
This is fantastic.
Something is wrong here.
Amazing. So many Moomoos in this story. Unbelievable. My Moomoo candidate is... Real Madrid / Benitez / Perez. You know how it goes.
Wonderful.
They were playing
You've got my vote already.
Yes. They were playing in the Copa del Rey. and it was against Cadiz. And 30 minutes in, little whispers started to go around the crowd. And the Cadiz crowd started singing, "You're getting kicked out of the cup, you're getting kicked out of the cup." And it was like, what is going on?
They had another chat going, saying,
"Check Rafa, Twitter.
Check your Twitter."
So, Rafa, check your Twitter. And then what happened was, apparently, Real Madrid played Cherichev, who they bought from Villarreal last season, but he was ineligible. He had gotten 3 yellows for Villarreal at the end of last season, and that should have carried over with his new club, and they didn't realize. Apparently, the story is, they got something from the, you know, the Spanish FA or whatever. But again, it was that, you know, that fax machine
was
the fault for De Gea's non-move?
Yeah.
It was again the fault for
conclusive evidence that it was Real Madrid's fault.
Right. They're using Windows 95. That's clearly the problem.
Are you even using Windows?
Perez came out with another press conference, his second in like 2 weeks after getting mauled by Barcelona.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Listen, we didn't know. We didn't do anything wrong. You can't kick us out." Next day, they're like, "Sorry, bro, you're out."
Do you think he does press conferences because his fax machine doesn't work? So he can't just send
press officers.
Like,
yes. Right. So, for a club as big as Real Madrid, that is unacceptable. All right, the big news we all woke up to earlier this week was that Gary Neville is now appointed head coach of Valencia FC until the end of the season for a 6-month contract. We did a whole write-up about it on the blog with contributors from our Twitter followers, and I think that was fantastic. We saw a lot of opinions.
Yeah.
But let's recap again what we all think. Bernie, you can start.
Everyone knows I like Gary Neville.
Yes.
But I don't think this is a good appointment. And I think he has nothing to lose here.
Right.
I really don't. But I do believe that it was done for the wrong reasons.
Mm-hmm.
He's business partners with Peter Lim.
Yes.
They co-own Salford City FC.
His brother's already
and
there.
You can use that cronyism to get help your brother get coaching badges.
Yes.
Right? The experience. He's training. I get that. But then to throw Gary Neville in at the deep end, it's not good for Valencia. It's okay for him, but not good for Valencia.
I think this is a good career move for Gary Neville, because with all his excellent punditry and analysis, at some point they were going to suggest him being a manager of something.
Right.
So regardless of what happens,
don't say no, just take
it. He's got just over a half season at Valencia.
Right.
He's got Phil Neville there, Peter Lim's the owner. It's a good setup.
It's like they say for new graduates, never reject your first job. You just take it. You get your experience.
He was never
going to
say no.
Yeah.
In either case, he's going to find his way after this. It's going to be a good experience. I don't think Valencia are going to... I think they're going to be fine. They just drew 1-1 with Barcelona.
Right. Well, the thing... Just before we move on to that game, the thing I want to say about this appointment is that I looked at it from a Valencia fan point of view, and I would be absolutely fuming. If I woke up in the morning and Gary Neville was my coach, I already have Phil Neville as assistant, the ambition isn't there. I mean, Valencia is a huge club, and they should be hiring someone with experience, that has trophies, that, you know, there's a resume behind him. And I just feel, fine, it's great for Gary Neville, but from a fan's point of view, I'd be
questioning.
At some point, exactly. So who? Because managers with experience...
Right, in the middle of the season.
Really
yeah.
old. But then we always have to have someone new coming in to acquire that experience, and this is an opportunity.
I heard people talk about Frank Rijkaard, for instance.
Mm.
And I was wondering where that guy's been, but he's been in Saudi Arabia and messing things up. Like,
Making money.
He's been going around places and
doing a terrible
job. So maybe they thought, is this guy the right guy we need? Or maybe, because in next season,
mm-hmm.
in summer, there's going to be a lot of managerial movement.
Right.
Maybe he thought, hey, I
six
know
months,
you.
Uh-huh.
If you can just stabilize this ship for 6 months, I can get someone I need. Or if you do really well, you get the job.
It's good he said ship, because, I mean...
Yeah.
They're quite close to the other version of that word.
Yeah.
But anyways, Valencia did draw with Barcelona this weekend. Gary Neville very smartly decided not to be on the bench for this one and let his brother take care of
smart
it.
Smart move.
Very smart move, just in case Barca dominated 5 or something. But that didn't happen. Barcelona, to be fair, in the first half, Messi with 2 gilt-edged chances. That game should have been over. Messi doesn't seem like he's still fully 100% back, because those two are 100% goals.
Are you talking about Messi and Neymar's combinations?
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Suarez eventually scoring from a Messi assist, offside.
Brilliant goal.
Brilliant goal, everything except the offside bit,
sure.
Of course.
They just the one time they didn't really master
yes.
the offside.
Yeah.
Really,
yeah.
But
then Valencia outdid that goal, to be fair.
Yeah, this was Rap 1 English football,
yes.
the way Valencia scored.
Phil Neville influence all that.
Yes.
But so basically what happens is the ball comes in from the right back. Barcelona's high line is exposed, and Pablo Alcacer takes it with his chest and then with his head
mm-hmm.
controls the ball. He draws Piqué and Mascherano away from the ball
yes.
for the run from Mina, to come in. Just lays it off for him in a beautiful
Great finish.
It was so good that a fan who was 43 years old died.
Yeah, he got a heart attack and died when Valencia
scored. I don't know how to feel right now.
I know. I mean, you died. Like, it's like,
wow.
Yeah, okay. It's not worth it, but like, you died doing what you love.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I guess so.
Yeah.
If I went out, I want to go out with like the Champions League final going 99.
Hey, how many people go out while getting mentioned on the Under the Cosh podcast?
That is props.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. But yeah, so Barca dropped 2 points there, which is great for everyone else.
You know why he may have died? Why? Because Phil Neville, Gary Neville, Van won to Barcelona.
Yes, he's like, I can't
too much.
It's been a crazy week.
It's too much.
I want to know if anyone died when Moyes beat Barcelona 1-0.
For sure. People were falling off of their stands.
The hospitals were full or something. Yeah.
Madrid capitalized on Barca's dropping of points by beating Getafe 4-1.
Like, we didn't see that one coming.
Yes.
To be fair, this was another stupid performance from Real Madrid.
Yes.
And I say that because they were up 4-0 at halftime.
And then nothing happened in the second half.
Stop
Benzema scoring 2, so at least it seems like he's put some of that stuff behind him.
No, it's Getafe.
It's Getafe.
To be fair, I mean, I think when you saw the highlights of this game, when you see the Madrid goals in the first half, it just looks like Getafe are just there to ball watch and watch them hit.
This is my
pass
theory,
the ball to each other.
After every Clásico, they give Real Madrid Levante or Getafe. So that they can get their feelings back up and everything.
That's
right. Or like a Cadiz.
So
Cadiz.
The highlight for me from this game was Ronaldo being upset over not being awarded a penalty when Benzema scored. So the whole team is celebrating. Ronaldo's still berating the referee about a penalty in the same play. It's like, bro, you scored. Forget it. It's like, no. I need to make my point. And it was just like...
He's like, ref on principle.
Yes. On principle referee. Anyways, Madrid get their 3 points. Atletico also get their 3 points. 2-0 against Granada away, which is a good score because Godin... Anyone wants to guess how he scored?
Corner
kick.
Yes.
To be fair, that header was like so
That's what
hard.
He does. Front post headers is Godin. It's all Godin.
Absolute rocket.
Yeah. Griezmann, obviously on the score sheet. He's, you know what? People say, who do you replace Ronaldo with? Who do you replace Hazard with if Chelsea stand him? Who should Arsenal?
No, let's not do
Griezmann,
this.
For me, should be top of the transfer list of almost
great.
Every club.
He's great.
Let me explain something to you. You know how people have been talking about Cristiano, Bale, coming to United,
yes.
for instance?
Yes.
No. Because we know those guys are superstars and about how it messed them up. He's a superstar, but Griezmann, anyone who can play in a system like Diego Simeone, because
yes.
that is a rigid, rigid system.
Yeah.
I'd have him any day because he fit.
He's unbelievable. Anyways, the table really quickly. Barca are 2 points ahead of Atletico, who are 2 points ahead of Madrid, so it's still quite up there. Celta Vigo dropped off a bit. But it's really between those three again. And until Madrid are 3 points close, the next Clásico is going to be useless. So let's hope by then Madrid are at least 3 points.
Is useless
anyway. Yes.
Yeah.
Last but not least, today in about half an hour, we've got the MLS Cup.
Mm-mm.
No?
The MLS Cup final.
Did I say?
Well, you said
MLS
you know how
Cup
we
final.
Yeah, you for saying
yeah, I don't
MLS.
Say the MLS anymore, do I?
So you can say the, or is it MLS Cup? Yeah, I think you're right.
Okay.
The Cup final of MLS.
I'm not saying THE in any sentence for this segment. So, MLS Cup, we've got Columbus Crew versus Portland Timbers. Portland Timbers' first appearance in an MLS Cup final against Columbus, who absolutely somehow dominated the Red Bulls to get here.
Sean McPhillips.
So both the underdogs have made it to the final now. Now, who do you pick? It's going to be a great game.
It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. I don't see a favorite per se, but it is at Columbus.
So the Cup Final actually has a home stadium?
Yes. So before they used to play in a neutral city.
Yes, it used to be.
But then
neutral.
Now what they do is the team with the highest, with the best, better record in the league, like no points, whatever, is where they're going to have the home game. Is where they're going
to
have
the I like the idea of a neutral ground, but it is harder to attract crowds. Let's say if it's all the way in Vancouver.
Yeah,
that's actually a
like,
very good point.
You get Portland versus Columbus.
Because it's not a national organization,
yeah.
right? They have three Canadian teams here, so are fans really going
to... The fans don't travel as much as they do. Yeah.
Well, they're not going to go all the way to Vancouver to watch Columbus.
But it will be a sold-out crowd.
Yes,
completely.
Definitely. But, I mean, the problem is Kamara is a doubt for Columbus,
yeah.
which is a huge issue because apparently he got a bit injured in practice yesterday. So that would be a huge miss for them. And for me, with the home crowd and everything, and Columbus played better overall football than Portland, who are more pragmatic, I think Columbus should possibly get this one, maybe 2-1.
It's very difficult for the away team to win in these things. And that's why, you know, the supporter shield, as they say, like winning the league or whatever, is so important. Like, I think they actually did that also to give importance to the league position.
Right.
So you don't just mess around against the playoffs and then see what happens. So And with Federico Higuain pulling the strings right behind, if it is Kay Kamara, yeah. I don't see Portland pulling this out. But Portland have honestly surprised us all by even getting here in the first place.
Agreed. It's their first appearance in
the They've taken some big names along the way as well.
I mean, they've only been a franchise since 2011 or something.
Yeah.
So
it could be a real fairy tale for them, but I think I'd have to agree and say that Columbus are the favorites for this game.
Right. I think what we're going to do is pretty much end the pod and go watch that.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, see you guys next week.
Thank you for downloading the KoshCast. Get in touch at underthekoshblog@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at under_thekosh. And for articles, predictions, and the full experience, go to underthekoshblog.com.